Hello and welcome to the MJA podcast. My name's Kate Swanell and I'm your host. Today we're going to be talking about vancomycin-resistant enterococci and how a global shortage of a certain broad-spectrum antibiotic in 2017 sparked an exciting experiment at John Hunter Hospital in Newcastle. Dr. John Ferguson is an infectious diseases physician and a microbiologist at John Hunter, and he's here today to explain his research to us. What happened in 2017 in terms of antibiotic use in hospitals?
Well, there was a global shortage of tazosin, or piperacillin tazobactam that was we knew about it several months in advance, and that affected our hospitals to differing degree depending on how many patients were getting that antibiotic. And John Hunter was quite a high user of the antibiotic, so we rapidly ran out of stock.
In your research letter, you talk about two studies that were done in the late 90s regarding switching from one kind of antibiotic to another. What did they tell us about what might be the effect of doing that? And why did you feel you needed to do this research post-2017?
Yeah, so those studies were very old studies, one of which implied that switching to piperacillin tazobactam had a better effect on VRE, but perhaps because it has enterococcal action, the piperacillin affects the enterococcus. However, when you read between the lines, the study really didn't use the correct techniques to examine the impact of the changes in antibiotics that took place. There were other changes besides the change in piperacillin tazobactam.
Did John Hunter have an outbreak of VRE?
John Hunter's had emergence of particularly VAN-A VRE since late 2013.
Okay.
And despite high levels of infection control compliance, we've had a real struggle to control transmission, particularly in the intensive care unit. The tazosin shortage represented a natural experiment that was really quite exciting to us. We realised probably about 5 months into the shortage period that VRE acquisitions had gone down, and at that point we decided to keep tazosin usage restricted. Okay. It had come back into availability, but we kept it heavily restricted.
Okay.
So that we could examine the effects over a full 12-month period. We routinely collect this surveillance data.
Right.
So we had that available, and we didn't change that practice. So all new multi-resistant organism acquisitions in the hospital are categorised by whether they're nosocomial or not, and indeed hospital onset or not.
Yes.
And we also do similar for C. difficile new infections, so that was available to us. We tracked the antibiotic use as per usual across the periods, so that didn't change either. So all that data was available to us. We had prepared for the shortage by largely engaging with our surgeons around a new protocol that used amoxicillin clavulanate instead of piperacillin tazobactam. Mm-hmm. So that protocol was already in place by the time the shortage occurred, and the use of amoxicillin clavulanate ramped up in response to the shortage. And we looked at other agents, and they, in large part, they stayed unchanged. So things like ceftriaxone, ceftazidine, and vancomycin didn't change. It was mainly a change to use of the amoxicillin clavulanate and reduction in piperacillin tazobactam. They switched over.
And what were your major results, John?
Very significant finding was a reduction in hospital onset VRE acquisition, going from 191 acquisitions in the 12 months prior to shortage to 101 in the post-shortage period. So that's 12 months versus 12 months.
Yes.
That's a 47% reduction. And we also found that hospital onset MRSA reduced from a lower baseline, 53 going down to 31. Acquisitions, that's 42% reduction. That wasn't significant statistically. We looked at sterile site detections of VRE because that's really a measure of the morbidity. So bloodstream infections or other sterile site infections flag with that sort of microbiology. And so we had 24 of those in the pre-period going down to only 8 in the post-period. So that was a real change from the patient point of view, because these infections are incredibly difficult to treat, especially if they're occurring in, say, the setting of prosthetic joint infection. And so that's a real gain for patients. We also looked at C. difficile and whether healthcare-associated C. difficile changed, because the British would tell us that amoxicillin clavulanate is one of the drugs that has been that drove their hyperendemic C. difficile situation in the 90s.
Yes.
But we failed to show any change in C. difficile. C. difficile is at a low rate in John Hunter. It remained exactly the same looking at the two periods side by side.
Was there any other change in hospital practice that might have contributed to your result?
Yes, that's important to know. Our hand hygiene compliance remained above 90% in both periods.
Yeah.
We did implement a new disinfectant general use wipe that was sort of staged in through the second half of the post-shortage period. We don't think that the real change in acquisition occurred at exactly the same time as the shortage. So it was sort of there was a very close relationship there. So we don't think there were other changes that were responsible for this.
I'm chatting today with John Ferguson, an ID specialist at John Hunter Hospital in Newcastle. John's co-authored research can be found at mja.com.au, where it is, of course, open access. Back to our chat. As a microbiologist, is there anything you can tell about the nature of or the strains of the VRE in John Hunter because of this study of these results? Is there anything specific you can know about what kind of VRE you guys have had?
Yeah, so we've got a mixture of Van A and Van B strains, Van A being predominant. Both Van A and Van B reduced in this period, Van A from a higher baseline. We've looked, subsequent to this, we've looked at some work that was done in Queensland that showed that piperacillin tazobactam use in an ICU setting was equally able to drive VRE acquisition in comparison to cefepime. There's also some in vitro gut models that show that piperacillin tazobactam affects the microbiome of the gut quite considerably.
Yeah.
Possibly is driving a reduction in colonisation resistance in patients. However, there's just no specific data looking at this in humans, and what we'd like to do as a case control study is of recent VRE acquisitions and really narrow down on the antibiotic risk factors and other risk factors in our patients might give us some idea.
Is that underway, that research?
It's going to start in the second half of this year, which is setting that up. The other work we're planning to do, subsequent to this study, we've seen VRE start to come back again as tazocin use is creeping up in our intensive care unit. Apparently there's some sort of threshold effect with the tazocin use. To analyse that further, we are planning to use a different sort of time series analysis called non-linear analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been used quite successfully in Europe, and it will enable us to work out threshold effects. Maybe that using piperacillin tazobactam up to a certain threshold is okay, but once you go above, say, 10 DDDs per 1,000 patient days, defined as daily doses per 1,000 patient days, you run into an ecological problem. So this has been shown in Europe for things like MRSA and multi-gram negatives, these threshold effects using this analysis. Nobody's yet done this for VRE. That's an exciting prospect.
You just said that VRE is creeping up in the ICU. Do you think there's a danger that the resistance to the newest combination of drugs will increase over time? Is this a temporary reduction, in other words?
Well, VRE is inherently resistant to piperacillin tazobactam, so it can't be used therapeutically against VRE. The therapy is not affected by this sort of effect. I guess what we are keen to know is whether there are other better agents we can be using in intensive care, say for pneumonia, that doesn't drive VRE to the same extent.
Yes.
And it's sort of the way ahead towards a smarter approach to antibiotic stewardship. So developing knowledge of certain thresholds for the different key agents and focusing use on agents that have less impact on the ecology of resistance. So, and that's an analysis that needs to be done at lots of different hospitals with different resistance and antibiotic use patterns.
Yes.
So that we can draw some generalisations about, you know, goals that might be set around usage amounts, you know, so that, for instance, ceftriaxone, we might decide that usage up to 15 is okay, or it will drive ESBL E. coli. Those sort of threshold effects exist.
Yeah.
And there's always some play available in hospitals in terms of there being a large group of patients getting these agents empirically, whereby we can tighten up and work through better stewardship to reduce that sort of use and target our antibiotic use more effectively.
Now that the PT shortage is done, are you reintroducing it?
Remains a restricted agent. What's naturally happened, though, is that in intensive care unit, there are more and more indications for using broad-spectrum agents like piperacillin and tazobactam. So we've maintained our intra-abdominal sepsis protocol that focuses on use of narrow-spectrum agents, reduces the use of piperacillin and tazobactam. The challenge, I think, for us is to develop a different approach for ventilator-associated pneumonia in ICU, where a lot of that's the piperacillin tazobactam use is driven. Another situation is intra-abdominal sepsis, where, you know, the sort of patients we have in our intensive care tend to be quite complex. They may have persistent problems with infection and they eventually get onto tazobactam, and as a result, it could be that a different antibiotic combination might be better off. That's something we need to work through. What we haven't been able to demonstrate in this work is that we didn't cause any harm by changing over to amoxicillin clavulanate. We would like to have individual patient data to look at the impact of that change and show that there wasn't increased mortality or treatment failure that resulted from using a narrower spectrum agent intra-abdominal infection. And that's something that we're thinking about, how we would do that work. Looking at retrospective data is going to be tricky because there's so many potential confounders in these patients.
Thanks, John.
Cheers, bye.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.